Hello and welcome to Literary Loitering. We're back once again with... I was going to basically try and think of other words for like literary and loitering, but that's it. There's books and there's messing about.
Yep.
That's kind of the entire crux of the show.
It's kind of a perfect name for us, isn't it?
It is. As always, I'm Andrew and I'm joined by my regular co-hosts, Rob and Graham.
We're missing a Graham.
Shh. No, we're not. He's right there. Just go on, Graham. Introduce yourself.
Hello. That was an awful impression of Graham.
What? When did Graham suddenly become an Irish leprechaun?
I have no idea. I was trying to do my impression of how he says hello, and it failed. Sorry, Graham.
I mean, I had a whole thing planned about how he was in a strophe, but that was even better.
But
no, Graham is not with us this week. It's just me and Rob.
But you can tell how it's going to go already.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those shows again.
I think it was the last time Graham wasn't with us. And we ran around like unruly children.
He is the responsible adult of the show. The yes. Soothing chamomile tea.
It's a shame he's not here, because this first story he would have been perfect for. Because he hates her. He hates her with a passion. Jane Austen is now officially on the new plastic £10 notes. Are they plastic? Yes, they are.
Yeah, they're probably... I like the £5 notes with that weird like Monopoly money feel.
Yeah, she's on the new £10 notes, and apparently the quote is raising a few eyebrows, because at first glance, the line is from Pride and Prejudice. You know, I declare, after all, there is no enjoyment like reading.
Solid quote.
Yeah. But the words are actually spoken by one of Austen's most deceitful characters, Caroline Bingley, who has no interest in books. She is sidling up to Mr. Darcy, whom she would like as a husband. He is reading a book, so she sits next to him and pretends to read alongside him.
See, here's the thing.
Yep.
A lot of the time I feel like it's okay to just use quotes a little bit outside of their context.
Yeah.
But when it's specifically meant to be a quote to show, oh yeah, Jane Austen, she was really great and she loved books, it seems like a bit of a slap in the face.
I know.
I hope that, like, when asked about it, the person who put the quote just shrugged, like, what am I going to do? Actually read Pride and Prejudice?
The way I'm looking at this and the way I interpreted that character was basically Victorian gold digger. That's what that Caroline Bingley character is.
You brought it back around. It's perfect to be on money.
Exactly. But it's now making Jane Austen out to be a gold digger.
Boy, I can't wait for the new £50 note with just Kanye West on it.
Well, is he going to have that no man should have all that power on there?
I mean, I was thinking more she ain't nothing but a gold digger.
All right. But no man should have all that power would be perfect on a £50 note, since hardly anyone has one.
No, it shouldn't, Rob. Because I can't, like, have anything to do with that phase now, all because of you.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to do it, don't worry.
Okay, thank you, because that's traumatised me enough.
Who is going to be on the £50 note? Do they know?
It's me.
Sorry. I'm just imagining you with, you know, just with a big stupid grin and two thumbs up.
Finally, the dream of having Andrew Books would be a reality. Oh, just imagine how great that would be. Like, you could go to the airport and they could say, oh, I need some identification, please.
You just
hold up a £50 note.
Yes. You don't need a passport anymore. Did you see Andrea Leadsom cocked up with the Jane Austen thing, saying that she was one of the country's greatest living authors?
That's accidentally letting onto the government's secret cryogenics programme.
Yep. Even though just a couple of days before, it was like 200th anniversary of Jane Austen's death.
See, I think all this story is doing is proving the point that Graham has certainly made a lot, that no one really likes Jane Austen.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things people say they've read to sound smart.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, it brings me back to the point I made before. How much did we hate people like Shakespeare and Jane Austen that we celebrate the year they died?
You're right, that's it. It's just been lost to time that we're actually celebrating the fact that they're dead.
Yes. I mean, if you think about it, 400 years since Shakespeare's death, How much did you hate him that you continue celebrating that?
I mean, we make this joke, but now surely there genuinely must have been people like back in the Elizabethan age who were like, oh, good God, that Shakespeare's written another play.
Yeah.
He's really gone downhill since Macbeth, you know.
You know, he's draining vital funds from the economy. We can't keep investing in this thing called art.
People start just hurling eggs at him, yelling, contribute to society, you bum.
Yes. Look, we need to build more roads. We need to improve the infrastructure of the country. We need to move beyond the horse and cart.
I mean, it's weird because I know we do the whole we are idiots and we like to joke.
Yeah.
But I think we've stumbled upon like a genuinely good point here.
Yeah.
That's freaky. That's weird and scary.
I know.
Must be even mysterious and spooky.
Yes.
Do-do-do-do-do-do, the Addams Family.
You were just queuing that up, weren't you?
I was.
I'm lost. I don't know how to continue with that story. I think we've destroyed it enough.
Yeah, well, I think we should do the same as the person whose job it was to put the quote on the note did with his copy of Pride and Prejudice, which is just shut it after the first page and chuck it to the side.
I'll just close the eyes, flick through, and then stop at a page and open it and go, that one will do.
I mean, oh, if we're going to get really technical, just get a copy like on a computer, type into the search function, and just take the first quote you find.
So basically, you're saying, don't Google famous quotes from Pride and Prejudice. Use Bing instead.
Yes, that's right. Bing will stop you making mistakes like this by not bringing up anything you would ever want.
Exactly. I need a quote from Pride and Prejudice. How about a nice bit of Harry Potter?
Here's a Facebook page for Jane, who lives in Austin, Texas.
Yes. Can you imagine that, though, if they use Bing instead of Google to search for famous quotes from Pride and Prejudice to put on the £10 note? And they ended up with a quote from Jane from Austin, Texas.
I think that is what would happen. Because Bing is terrible.
I'm just imagining the £10 note with a picture of Jane Austen and the quote saying,
all you players can't handle my badonkadonk.
Either that or...
because that's how Jane from Texas rolls.
It's either that or something to do with possums.
Jane Austen, damn Obama will never take my guns.
Yes. Or just some weird Charlton Heston quote. Jane Austen saying, from my cold dead hands.
See, I'm sad now because this is the part where Graham would chime in with something like, and they are all better than actual Jane Austen quotes.
Yes, he would. You channeled Graham much better than I did there.
I did. I have, like, summoned his spirit.
Oh. Now that...
it's probably quite distressing for him since he's not dead.
I know. Now that you've summoned Graham's spirit, J.K. Rowling apparently can't afford paper or a computer or a tablet PC or a smartphone or anything like that. So she has to resort to writing her secret manuscripts on things like postcards, or in this case, a party dress.
We joke, but are we sure that maybe just the casual racism didn't sell so badly that now she's actually impoverished?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Apparently she wrote a secret manuscript which has not been published yet, and she wrote it on a party dress which is hung in her wardrobe. It is allegedly a political fairy tale, which makes me think that she's stolen a bunch of ideas from fables.
And also there's probably some horribly obvious metaphors.
Yep.
Like David Cameron is literally just a pig in this.
Yep. The book which she penned 2 years ago for a fancy dress birthday party now hangs in her wardrobe alongside more conventional clothing, which probably has been written on, but she hasn't admitted to it. Do you think, like, J.K. Rowling is like a serial doodler, where she can't stop drawing on stuff or writing on stuff?
You know what? Harry Potter makes a lot more sense when you think of it as just one woman's, like, abstract scribblings while she's bored.
Yeah.
I don't like J.K. Rowling, Rob. As an author, I'm sure she's a lovely person, except she is the kind of person who goes to a Halloween party dressed as the scariest thing she could think of, which is a lost manuscript.
Oh my God. Remember,
just dress as a vampire, J.K. Rowling.
No, do you remember I made that comment, people cosplaying as a manga?
She did. She cosplayed as a manga.
It's J.K. Rowling. I didn't realise what I was channeling there, but obviously it was this story. Apparently the parents...
That's it. She just like ADHD and just didn't finish the invitation where it said, come dressed as your favourite book character.
Either that, or she did finish the invitation. She did finish writing her RSVP and then continued writing because her hand was already moving.
See, you know what would be a better book series than Harry Potter?
What?
J.K. Rowling struggling with her phantom writer hand. She's like, her hand is possessed by Ernest Hemingway or something.
Yes. It'd be like that, you know, that scene with Ash in Evil Dead where his hand gets possessed.
Yes.
Oh, so yeah, apparently Rowling says the fairy tale isn't a political fairy tale in a sort of party political sense. So what kind of politics are you talking about, J.K. Rowling? Because party politics is kind of the majority of politics, isn't it?
Oh, who even knows? It's just the usual nonsense guff that she spouts on about.
Or is she on about international politics? Is it going to be fairy tales from Russia versus fairy tales from America?
Like some kind of fairy tale Cold War. No, it can't be, because that actually sounds like a good book.
Are you having thoughts of, like, the Ice Queen waging a Cold War against fairy tales?
I mean, I was thinking more like fables, but some kind of spy who came in from the cold-esque thriller.
Okay.
Like the Baba Yaga is some kind of Russian intelligence operative.
Okay, yeah, I think that works. Well, no, because the Baba Yaga would be, she wouldn't be an operative, she'd be in charge of Russian intelligence.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about, like, she is mission control.
Yeah, because she has the...
friend with the screens.
Well, she has the house on the duck feet, doesn't she? So it moves around.
God, yeah, like some kind of orbital space station.
Yep.
This is the best idea we've ever had, Rob.
I know.
This is it. Graham's gone. He's not coming back. We are just digging up gold this week.
Oh, God. I'm just imagining it'd be amazing, wouldn't it? Kind of an international spy thing involving fairy tales. Because you've got fairy tales from all over the world. You could really build on this. This is our idea. If anyone steals it, I will hunt them down. I won't bother suing. I will hunt them down.
And, like, but what if they send John Wick? Because he is the one you sent to kill the Baba Yaga.
Yes, he is. Also, I won't actually do anything to these people. I'll just hunt them down and then sit outside their house and stare at them.
Say that like that's not horrifying enough.
No. I'll follow them around, you know, mimicking every action they do.
That's quite creepy, actually, Rob.
I know.
You keep saying things like that, and I genuinely worry you might be a bit of a psychopath.
What do you mean, a bit?
So the next story we've got...
Yes, next story we've got is kind of... It's a beautiful retort, let's say, rather than using any other words, to all of the senses in the world. An Argentinian artist has built a full-size replica of the temple on the Acropolis in Athens, the Parthenon, and it's constructed on a former Nazi book-burning site, and it's been built out of 100,000 books that were banned.
That's just a cool thing to do.
Yep. The artist is called Marta Minujin. He's 74, and he's been calling on people to donate books from a list of banned titles, and says that the installation is a symbol of opposition to the banning of writings and the persecution of their authors. And I say, well done. I think it's an amazing thing to do.
Yeah, and you know, I've got a bit of a controversial statement to make, but yes. I'm going to say it anyway. The Nazis were kind of a bunch of doo-doo heads.
Yes, they were.
And they absolutely deserve a giant monument of just like a middle finger to them.
It's such a beautiful middle finger to them, though, isn't it? This is the classy way of giving the middle finger to somebody.
Oh, yeah, like, there is nothing better or classier than an artist who gets revenge.
Yes.
Do you ever realise this is as well?
What?
This is like a super classy version of Fort Pedalsmut.
Oh, God, yes, it is. Oh, no, we should get him to design Fort Pedalsmut.
Yes.
Because obviously he's got the talent for it, hasn't he?
Yes, just build a giant castle out of, like, all the banned erotic books of the world.
With a drawbridge made of Da Vinci Code.
See, I don't know. I feel like Da Vinci Code isn't the thing you walk on to get above the waist.
Oh, so a moat filled with Da Vinci Code.
Yes, we'll fill the moat with Da Vinci Code. Just like blend it all into a massive pile of swill.
Why is the moat that yellowy brown colour? Because that's...
Maybe literally just like get Dan Brown, put him in a cage and hang him above the moat.
No. We just keep him in a cage and use him as a secret weapon. If the fort gets invaded, we release the Brown.
Quickly, Dan Brown, bore them to death with your conspiracy theories.
Exactly. He stands there and gives a lecture to an army until they start killing each other.
But you know what, Rob?
What?
We wouldn't be saying these things if Dan Brown was an African woman.
No, we wouldn't. I'll be honest, we wouldn't. We'd get crucified if that was the case. It's not, is it?
Not the last time I checked.
Hey, these days, you do have to check.
See, don't, because now I'm really tempted to open up Google and just type in, is Dan Brown an African woman?
Because no, if Google returns an answer saying yes, then we really are in the Twilight Zone.
That would be even worse than the time I Googled, what's a lolly?
Anyway, speaking of the Twilight Zone.
Oh, yes, on to our next story.
Yes. Thing is, saying that you're in the Twilight Zone or you've entered the Twilight Zone is one of those things that people say now. It's part of the cultural lexicon for a lot of people, isn't it?
I don't know. I feel like people haven't said that for a while.
Well, no. You know, when something has gone totally weird, the go-to term is, you know, oh, it feels like we're in the Twilight Zone or that's a bit Twilight Zone or something like that. I know that a lot of people...
Yeah. Twilight Zone is one of those things that, like, everyone at least has a vague awareness of.
Yeah, they have a vague understanding of what it actually means. I know that they did, like, a TV show called The Outer Limits, but it never really had the same sort of impact as the Twilight Zone, did it? But,
Well, Outer Limits was basically Twilight Zone, but 90s.
Yeah. Twilight Zone, created by Rod Serling, and it's nearly 60 years old. No. And opening this December is a new adaptation of Serling's original work by Anne Washburn, directed by Richard Jones, who has won the Olivier Award, apparently. What is it about these awards that they have to keep reminding people that they've won an award? You know, we've won swimming awards, we don't tell people about it all the time, do we?
I mean, even that. Morrissey is an award-winning author. Suicide Squad is an award-winning film.
Yeah.
It's meaningless.
Exactly. So anyway, The Twilight Zone is being adapted for the stage.
See, on the one hand, I feel like, yeah, that's probably doable. There are, like, horror stage plays.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, whenever someone says stage play, I immediately think musical.
Yep. That's what I was thinking as well. And Twilight Zone the musical does not work in my head.
Excuse me, air hostess. There's an entire chorus line on the wing. I actually really want Twilight Zone the musical now.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't think the world is ready for it yet.
Also, what I want even more than a stage show of the Twilight Zone...
What?
...is a stage show of The Spooky Door from Futurama.
Yes. The Spooky Door would be amazing as a musical, though.
It would. That would actually work.
Also, please don't do the X-Files musical. Don't ever do any more of the X-Files, actually. Just leave the X-Files alone.
Except then it turns out all stage shows of the... No. I was trying to give it some kind of Twilight Zone-esque twist, but I couldn't.
Sorry, something just opened there, and I'm not sure what it was.
There we go. That's the Twilight Zone-esque twist. Because it turns out the web page was open all along. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
No.
Yes.
No, do you know actually what might actually be interesting as kind of a one-off stage play would be, I mean, it's the only good X-Files story. It's that Tombs one. about the guy living under the escalator.
Okay, so here it is. Here's the Twilight Zone-esque twist to this story. I was never really that into the X-Files.
Neither was I. I don't think anyone actually was. I mean, that Tim story is... If you ask people...
You're talking about, like, one of the most popular TV series ever, Rob.
Yeah,
but... I'm pretty sure some people were into it.
No, there were some people into it, but this is the thing I've noticed. It's like The Big Bang Theory and Friends and other really, really popular TV shows. If they were as popular as everyone made them out to be, then they'd still be running them now. But you don't see the X-Files being run anymore. Friends, you don't really see on TV anymore.
But that's because it had like 10 series, Rob.
Yeah, but all I'm saying...
It was like one of the longest running sitcoms ever made.
Yeah, all I'm saying is that these days you can get reruns of...
Happy Days, how come you aren't still going on?
Actually it is.
Yeah, that's it. You weren't as popular as you thought.
No, Happy
Why
Days...
Why do we not have like 60-year-old Henry Winkler still dressing up in a leather jacket and going, hey?
No. They still do reruns of Happy Days.
They still do reruns of Friends.
Where?
On the Comedy Central.
Do they? I don't get Comedy Central.
Jesus Christ, Rob.
That would explain why I've not seen it.
I take it back. Come back, Graham. Please come back, Graham. We need you so badly.
I don't get Comedy Central, which is why I've never seen reruns of Friends.
Rob?
Yeah?
Maybe. If you only get, like, 5 TV channels or whatever. Shouldn't say things like you're an authority.
But that's how you get things done. If that's how Donald Trump became president, I'm just following the Trump method.
If Game of Thrones is so popular, why didn't it start back in the 1950s?
Yes. But then again, given how long it's taken for the next book, maybe it did.
Actually, yeah, probably. Like, I'm sure George R. R. Martin's probably, like, started this when he was a teenager or something.
Yes.
Oh. We're never going to get the final book.
I don't know.
Probably never even going to get Winds of Winter. Actually, going back to like the J.K. Rowling story.
Yeah.
So apparently George R.R. Martin, sorry, Ger Martin, types like all his stories on this 1980s word processing thing. Like a pre-Microsoft Word program.
Why?
Because he's a cruel and spiteful man, Rob. Like, I'm pretty sure he's going to start just making videos of him writing Game of Thrones. It's just going to be him staring directly at the camera while slowly with a single finger typing on the buttons.
He's giving the camera unbroken eye contact.
And possibly with his other hand just giving the middle finger.
Yes.
And just that's in the slow... true ending to Game of Thrones.
Just in slow motion.
And then at the end of the episode, he turns back to the screen and says, oop, nope, that's all wrong, and just smashes the backspace.
Oh, either that or he goes full McAfee and starts doing weird videos filled with women wearing very little. Did you see those videos with John McAfee where he just went mad?
No, I didn't, Rob. That horrifying mental image was for nothing.
Anyway. Something that, because we were talking about Twilight Zone, and something that could possibly be a Twilight Zone story.
That's it, God, that's it. Naked George R. R. Martin is a horrifying Twilight Zone-esque twist to end on.
No, it's Salvador Dali. Salvador Dali has been exhumed from his crypt because of a paternity test. Because there's a woman called... Yeah?
If there's someone running around claiming Salvador Dali's their father, I'm a bit sceptical.
Yeah.
That's got to be the weirdest episode of Jeremy Kyle ever.
Yeah, I know. But here's the weirdest thing. Apparently, his mustache was completely intact.
Oh, my God. It was the advanced scout for Trump's hair.
Yes.
They've been slowly taking over all this time.
Yep. They've given us hints through things like The Simpsons as to what's actually going on. You know, the Treehouse of Horror where Snake's hair takes over Homer.
Yes, Snake's sentient hairpiece.
Yes. They've been dropping hints left, right and centre.
That's it. George R. R. Martin's beard is part of it. deliberately making him not finish the series.
Yep.
So that we'll all be too broken and demoralized to fight back.
I don't know what to say.
All I imagine now is us just like at the end of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, running around screaming, "It's the hair! It could have taken you over, or you!"
But not you, because you were always bald.
Yeah. That's it. Ross Kemp is now our only hope.
Yes.
But anyway, yeah, his moustache hasn't, hair doesn't really degrade, does it?
Well, it does. Eventually, it becomes brittle and starts breaking apart, doesn't it? Or as it dries out? Or at least...
But just look at that moustache. That is already, just a solid object.
Yeah, yeah.
Could cut your dinner with that.
The science behind the hair drying out, becoming brittle and drying out, I only am assuming because of the adverts that actually say your hair can become brittle, can dry out and become brittle.
This is... We've reached out to the top scientists at L'Oreal for comment.
Yes, and Garnier. Well, they do. All the adverts say your hair can become dry and brittle. They're like, well, is that what actually happens? So when I die, is my hair just going to turn to powder?
I guess it's got to, hasn't it? Because, you don't see skeletons with a full-on mane of hair.
Although that would be amazing. If you had a skeleton with an afro, for example, it would literally be a character out of One Piece.
Oh, the best blaxploitation movie ever.
Yes.
You could call it Soul Brother, because he'd be undead.
Yep.
Quick, get me a party dress. I've got a script to write.
Right, okay. Final news, sorry, before we take a break.
Yes, I think maybe Rob and Andrew's Science Corner is not going to be a regular occurrence on the show.
No, it's not. Because it's obvious we don't get science. Well, we do, but only after we've read up on it. Right. A theatre in London has attempted to recruit a new underpaid staff member. The theatre is called the Tea House Theatre, and it's offered between £15,000 and £20,000 per year for an office administrator. The full-time position, the job advert for it left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, they did not make this sound like a tempting offer.
Do you want to read it out?
I do want to read it out.
Go on.
Dear millennials, as a professional company in the arts industry for the best part of 20 years, grafting, scraping, cap in hand to angles?
I don't know.
And funding bodies and occasionally getting lucky, surviving on our box office, breaking even, and reveling in the success that the real world...
It's
angels. What is this words?
Cap in hand to angels and funding bodies.
That still doesn't make sense.
Investment angels. There's a term called angel investors who apparently will invest in your thing without asking for anything, any part of your company in return, but there's always a hook. I don't trust them.
Okay. No, I've never heard of it. See, I thought it said angels, but then I read angels. But that doesn't make sense. it still makes sense, more sense than breaking even and reveling in the success that in the real world that is. That's not a coherent sentence.
Nope.
That's not even the bad part of the advert.
Nope. No, the bad part was right at the beginning and then further on.
Yeah, to continue with this flustercook, it saddens me to be putting this advert up for the third time in as many months. Are you just not taught anything about existing in the real world where every penny counts? Did no one teach you that the end of your studies, beginning of your education... We are still here after all these years. We run a venue in South Central London. We run as a receiving house, producing house. That's two things on a list and then just a full stop. That's not how you do things. This advert hurts me to read, Rob. It hurts me so much. We have an outdoor events company putting on festivals on the Vauxhall Pleasure Gardens. We have been lucky enough to have been funded on several occasions in the last 5 years. by Arts Council England for our outdoor projects, but the bulk of the funding for the art in and around our venue comes from the venue itself. We raise our own money by running a successful business alongside and intrinsically part of our art. We opened in a recession and are about to embark on a number of major projects. One old lady used to run the whole of Mountview Academy with an IBM computer. It shouldn't be this hard. We need a grafter who can commit. The absolute dogs.
What?
The absolute dogs in office gear. That's not a saying. That's not a saying, theatre. You're the absolute dogs.
I think he means dogs bollocks.
Presumably, but also it's dogs plural, not apostrophe. Oh, the grammar wrong. Anyway, the absolute dogs in office skills. The ability to run a paper filing system as well as a computerized one. The ability to complete and keep track of a huge to-do list. To make our office work. Create and develop business management systems that help the business to grow. Giving space for more creative work to go ahead, to see where we are headed, and realize that it is in your own hands how far you are able to go with us as we grow. We have not been impressed so far. Yours sincerely, Directors Tea House Theatre Limited.
Okay, I want to pick some faults with this.
Is it everything? Is it every single thing about it, Rob?
No. Just specific things. I'm sorry, but the Tea House Theatre... They're saying they're in South Central London. Now, please don't refer to yourself as South Central. Ever. Because you are not. South Central is a different place entirely.
You've picked an interesting part of this to harp on.
Yeah. But also, the Vauxhall Pleasure Gardens.
I mean, that's not fair because everything you say sounds incredibly dirty.
I know. But we hold outdoor events in the... No, they put on festivals in the Vauxhall Pleasure Gardens, and I'm thinking, what type of festivals? What? What's going on? I've never heard this term, pleasure garden.
Well, it's the kind of festival that requires a big to-do list.
And absolute... No, I can't say that.
Man, I'm really glad there wasn't a part about how it's long, hard work.
No. They did. They did say that. What was it? Yeah, it shouldn't be this hard.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I like how this advert is basically, hey, come do lots of work for us for very little pay. And also, how dare you, like, not think this is the best job opportunity in the world ever.
Yeah, but they put this advert out. Obviously, somebody's been frustrated when they put it out. And had a bit of a rant on the advert. But they're advertising this for an office administrator. Fine. Cool. Get your office administrator. But, I'm sorry, when they want them to develop business management systems and help the business grow, that's not an office administrator's job, which may be why they're getting Muppets applying for the job, because an office administrator is generally a Muppet's job. If you want someone to help the business develop and grow, you want a business manager.
Yeah, like office administrator is filing stuff and sorting out spreadsheets.
And photocopying, sorting through the post, that sort of thing.
You're asking for someone to run the company.
Yes. And they're doing that in London and offering a wage of 15 to 20,000. I'm sorry, but...
Hi, Gary. Welcome to your first day on the job. How about you start off by making us a nice cup of tea and then sorting out funding for the next 5 years?
Yes, exactly. I'm sorry, but those are, you know, applying for funding and stuff like that, you need certain skills to understand how that works, because it is a specific skill set that you can put on your CV. You have experience applying for funding and investment. It's a very specific skill.
I wonder how many applicants they got.
Well, apparently Harriet Golden, who's the director of the Tea House, one of the people who wrote that, said that they were frustrated with the thin-skinned and narrow-minded applications they'd received.
No wonder people probably weren't that interested in, like, following through on the job.
This is a quote from Harry himself. Obviously, I was writing it with a bit of frustration and I was a bit disappointed with the job market. Since we started putting up the advert on Arts Council website, we were getting people who didn't understand the bottom line. They think somehow there is a money tree. We work awfully hard. We are a small family business. We get paid very little. We work for nothing because we work in the arts. There seems to be an expectation from young people to earn far more than what the company directors are earning. It is sometimes dispiriting when people think they know more than you. I am sorry if people find that a pittance. Guess what? I agree, but that is the reality of what we are doing, and we've been doing it for 20 years. But if you're earning pretty much nothing over 20 years, maybe it's time to try something different. Just a suggestion.
Yeah. You're basically admitting that your business is failing.
Yes.
And that's just, like, as someone who has experience looking for jobs in journalism,
yeah,
that is the exact same kind of mentality of the how dare you want something that pays like an actual living wage.
Yeah.
We're doing this for the art, not so that you can, you know, survive on something other than ramen.
I don't know what to say to this advert, except maybe if you want the business to grow, advertise for a business manager, pay them a bit more.
Yeah, like you have two different jobs that you want here.
Yeah.
Also, maybe don't belittle potential applicants in the thing itself.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Just as a crazy tip.
Well, here's the thing. Starting it off with dear millennials, if I was just after, like, a job, you know, maybe I'm close to retirement age and I just want something to potter around with for a few years until I hit retirement. I may have made my money already, but I just want to do something for me. £15,000-£20,000, not really bothered about the wage, so that might be a job I'd apply for. Maybe I've got a lifetime's worth of experience and all sorts of contacts that could be, you know, brought to bear with this. So opening it with dear millennials is automatically pissing me off and making me not want to apply.
Well, it's not even about it. It's this whole idea that, oh yeah, millennials, they're all lazy wastes of space.
They're not. I mean, opening it with that is literally, it's as you said, they're assuming that all millennials are lazy and a waste of space, but it's also cutting out all the people who aren't millennials because they won't want to apply straight away because they're automatically thinking, well, this job's just for this age group here.
All in all, it's just not a very good advert, is it?
No. Which, given it's the arts and the arts involves people who are able to write and maybe string a sentence together.
Well, clearly not at the Tea House Theatre. The absolute dogs.
Yes. Anyway, we're not going to take a break there because we are going to just launch straight into a nice little thing that we received from Turnaround and from Kodansha, which normally would be on four panel, but might have been on Keyframe. There's a possibility it could have even been on Cinema Eclectica. But no, I kept this because it deserves to be on Literary Loitering.
That it sully itself with any of those lesser shows.
Well, no, four panel isn't a lesser show.
You may
show.
Flirt around with them, you naughty book, but this is the good. You've pretty womaned it, Rob.
Yes,
you've
I have.
Pretty womaned this book.
I have, and this book is pretty. Very, very pretty. It is Otomo, a global tribute to the mind behind Akira. And if you are...
it's a thing we're going to be talking about after the break.
No, we're not taking a break.
Are we not? Okay, no. I don't know. I'm sleepy.
I just said there's no point in taking a break. So rather than taking a break and breaking things up, might as well just go straight through and do this. Unless you want to take a break.
Are you sure you said that?
Yes, I should. I said that.
You're saying?
Anyway. Right. So, Otomo, a global tribute to the mind behind Akira. And this is actually a collection of 80 colour illustrations that were created to honour Katsuhiro Otomo's receipt of the most prestigious award in global comics. The Angoulême International Comics Festival Grand Prix, released upon the 35th anniversary of Otomo's most famous work, Akira, this tribute includes contributions from giants of comics, animation and design from around the world, and... It includes new art by Alexei Bricklow, Asaf and Toma Hanukan, Range Murata, Masashi Kishimoto, Taiyo Matsumoto, Tsutomu Nihei, Sarah Picelli from Ultimate Spider-Man, Stan Sakagi, who does Usagi Yojimbo, Shiro Masamune, Naoki Urasawa, and many, many others. And I've got to say, it's an impressive tome. And it is an art book.
Is it the Absolute Dogs?
I would say this is more than the Absolute Dogs. You know, you sometimes get those art books that are kind of one person's work or the life and times of a particular artist or stuff like that. You know, maybe it's a filmmaker who happens to draw. Maybe it's George W. Bush who happens to paint. Maybe it's a book about his art or something like that. But this is one of those rare ones where it's a particular creator and it's the people who've actually encountered his work from all around the world who are actually doing pictures to honour that work and that person. And some of these are amazing pieces of work. What it does, it basically shows you the actual picture on its own page, gives you a sketch idea on the other page, and gives you a little biography about the artist and what work the artist has done. So it's laid out really nicely, and some of these are just... It's the kind of work that you would want, say, on posters around your town to make your town look pretty. You know, just giant posters all over the town.
What of weird psychic children and giant tentacle monsters?
Well, it says it's a tribute to the mind behind Akira, but it's not just about Akira. It's not just Tetsuo and Kaneda and those characters.
Which, incidentally, if I made this book, it would be entirely, feels like on one page, Kaneda saying, Tetsuo! And then on the next page, Tetsuo saying, Kaneda! Just that over every single page.
Yeah, I know. But Katsuhiro Otomo has done other work as well. He's done things like Domu and stuff like that. So, I mean, a lot of it is about Akira, but there are other images in this, other pictures in this, where the artist has referenced one of Otomo's other works. If I remember rightly, there's one in there for Rugged Zed, which is a very little-known work of Otomo's, which deals with elderly care. And I've got to say, it's one of those animated movies which I absolutely adore because it's very, very subversive. It's a black comedy through and through, dealing with elderly care.
Okay.
Basically, they create these beds that look after the elderly and the infirm, and these are artificially intelligent beds.
Oh, right, so it's still like a sci-fi thing.
It's a sci-fi thing, yeah. They've designed these things to replace nurses, and it's an AI bed, which is programmed with... it's given the voice of his dead wife, which they've synthesized from like old tapes and stuff like that. And because it's an AI, they've programmed it with things that he likes, stuff like that, to give him a more comfortable experience. But the problem is the AI that's been used is an old military AI, so it goes a bit mad and starts thinking that it is actually his wife.
No, so it's not like full-on army thing, but with the voice of an old lady.
No, it is. It literally is.
Oh, nice.
It literally is. He's like, I want to go. The old guy's like, I want to go to the beach. He's like, I'm taking my darling baby boo to the beach. Just goes careening off into the distance.
Now see, I'm thinking more like Winston Churchill, we will fight them on the beaches. But old lady voice.
Yeah, it just
goes... I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
No, it goes a bit nuts because this AI has like an assimilation matrix, so it can start absorbing other pieces of technology and using them to fight.
I like the sound of this.
Yeah, it's called Rugen Zed. You should watch it. It's a lot of fun.
Might just do that.
That's basically what Otomo did a lot of. He looked at social things and thought, well, how can I use this? What can I say about this? Akira as well, people don't realise there is a social commentary in Akira.
Oh yeah, it's all about like post-war Japan, isn't it?
Yeah.
And youth disillusionment.
Yeah, and people don't realise that.
See,
people. Just
I read fancy essays on film.
All I'm saying is people look at Akira and just think, oh wow, this is great cyberpunk stuff. You know, this is great science fiction.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I got into Akira because goddamn that bike is cool.
Oh, everyone wants the bike. Everybody wants a bike. I wanted the bike as well. That was the first thing that I wanted.
I mean, it's sad because can you just imagine how bad our backs would be after like a minute on that thing?
Yes. But God, wouldn't it be worth it? Wouldn't it be worth it?
Just like lying on the floor, my spine snapped in two. Just, I die content.
Yes, I have no regrets.
And that's it. That's how we died.
Yes, and that's how we're ending the show as well. All of our shows are available on iTunes, Audioboom, or the podcast provider of your choice. If you are listening through one of those services, then subscribe and it'll keep you up to date with all of our latest shows. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, or email us studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And that's about it. We'll be back very soon with more literary loitering. I think,
well,
Graham,
just as long as Graham has some free time and we don't die in a horrific motorbike explosion.
No. There won't be any explosion, because if you've noticed, the bike is always okay.
That's a good point. It's just going to be us that get horribly mangled.
Yes.
But I was even saying that's probably a bit too much. What's going to happen is we're going to get like a foot and then just fall off.
That is probably what's going to happen. Just to finish off, Akira does have like one of the most iconic film posters I've ever seen. You know, everyone recognizes film posters like Jaws and stuff like that. But Akira with Kaneda just wearing the red outfit and walking towards the red bike.
Yeah, it's especially weird considering, especially considering back then how little known anime was.
Yeah.
It's still, everyone knows the Akira poster.
It's like the Godzilla poster. Everyone recognizes the outline of Godzilla.
One of those iconic things.
Yes.
Just like Aiden Pierce's hat from Watch Dogs.
Yes, quite. Anyway, that's it for us. We'll see you on the next Literary Loitering. Until then, I have been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.